The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Week two, everyone. Week two of The Punt Podcast here in association with the Football Writers Association. Dave Kellner here, ready to guide you through an action-packed sports betting weekend. We've got lots coming up. We'll hear from Derek McGovern. He will give his best bets in the five televised Premier League matches, and he's joined by the football in-play trading manager, that is Andy Excel. We've got Pete Farris giving his best bet in the Championship. We have Al Ross, who was the only winner last week on the Punt Podcast as far as the Naps were concerned. He will give his best bet in League 2. And sandwiched in between, we'll hear from Gav Puszlowski, who gives his selection in League 1. The two-headed monster that is Alex Dunn and Sam Norris. This week, Sam Norris sticks his head above the parapet. He will give you his best European selection this weekend. And we have the Times chief sports writer, Matt Dickinson, who will be talking all things football. We will discuss Arsene Wenger. He was at the FWA Live on Wednesday night. We'll talk about some of the points that he made at the event in aid of the London Fire Fund that was sponsored by William Hill. And we'll also discuss Danny Rose. He's been in the headlines over the last 24 hours. So that's all to come on an action-packed Punt Podcast here with William Hill. Okay, so now to the Football Writers Association section of the podcast here. I'm delighted to be joined by Matt Dickinson from The Times, first of all. A warm welcome, a good morning to you, Matt.
Hi, morning.
How are you?
I'm very good. Looking forward to the new season. Here we are, just about ready to go.
We are indeed. And Derek, you join us as well. Good morning to you, Derek.
It's like a long summer break this time around. No international football to blow the pants off us this time. So, I'm raring to go as well.
Let's start with Danny Rose, Matt, because that's the big breaking story this morning. He's done an interview with the Sun newspaper, and he's talked about how he maybe isn't getting paid what he feels he deserves, which is pretty rich from a player that hasn't played since January, Matt.
First of all, I'll just say, you know, great journalism. Fair play to the Sun for getting the interview, and it's going to cause a lot of ramifications, I think, not, you know, for Rose, for Tottenham, and then this one's going to rumble, that's for sure. I mean, I think, first reaction is, wow. Even if whatever he wants out of this, that's a hell of a bombshell way to go about it. And I think, you know, it's for Tottenham, it's such a huge issue just because it's not quite tip of the iceberg, but we've seen what's happening with Eric Dier, Man United trying to get him. Him certainly not sort of averse to that type of move. And I wrote a column about this a couple of months ago about, you know, Levy's got to basically start paying some higher wages or there's going to be this type of trouble. And it's been brewing for a little while. I just think we're quite shocked by the sort of pretty explosive manner in which it's come out.
And Derek, I can empathise with Danny Rose to a certain extent because as a fellow Yorkshireman, you always want to get paid as much as you possibly can without ever actually spending any of it, Derek.
not me. This is a guy, Danny Rose, who's on loan at Sunderland a couple of seasons ago. He's a left back, for God's sake. These are words put into his mouth by an agent who sees a big payoff in the offer. I'm not having it. I mean, why wait until the end of the end of the summer? Well, the eve of the new season. I can't have it. I don't understand what's happening at Tottenham. They've made no signings in the transfer window, but everything seemed hunky-dory, and now all of a sudden there's rooks. Don't know what to make of this outburst at all.
And Matt, it's an interesting point about Spurs because they haven't made many signings. Mauricio Pochettino, he must be slightly upset with the way the transfer window has gone. He's kept the majority of his main players, Kyle Walker being the exception, but they've not made any. They've not strengthened that squad.
No, and they are, you know, they are in a difficult situation with the stadium move as well. Obviously, they, you know, we don't know how the Wembley factor's going to play with them. Obviously, it's not worked well for them in the Champions League. And I just think, you know, there's this issue. I mean, Lever take this as a compliment, but he's known as, you know, the Premier League's most difficult negotiator with. You know, other clubs invariably get infuriated by him. He's always sort of haggling right to the last minute, and say he would say that's him doing business. But he, you know, he runs a tight ship, and that's made, you know, over the last recent years with Pochettino has been colossally successful. I mean, they are punching above their weight. They are the one to, you know, the top four sides have been very turbulent. Top six, I guess we're talking about now, very turbulent. Tottenham are the ones that have punched, you know, punched well above their weight. But you wonder how long they can keep doing that. For all Pochettino's strengths, you wonder how long that will last. And I think, you know, maybe we are reaching a little bit of a tipping point now where, you know, it is going to slightly catch up with them, I think, especially with the money that City, United and others have spent.
Do you see them not quite replicating what they did last year then, Matt?
I don't, I'm afraid. I think, you know, I think City will be at least 10 points better this season. I think United will be at least 10 points better this season. Chelsea, there's a bit of turbulence we've seen with Conte, but I just think that, you know, if Tottenham will do well to get in the top four this season. I think, you know, I'm not saying they won't, but I think they'll have to, punch above their weight to do that again. And that's difficult to do season upon season. However good your manager is, and even with top quality players, you know, Harry Kane, Dele Alli and Vertonghen and all the ones we know about.
One team that wasn't mentioned there, Arsenal Football Club, who won the Community Shield last weekend, and the FWA were live at an event in aid of the London Fire Fund last night, and Arsene Wenger was on the panel for that event, and he made some very interesting points at the FWA Live, talked about how playing a 20-year-old might cost him points every season at the back when looking to bring through some of the younger English players, but that game time is a necessity for them to develop into world-class 23 or 24-year-olds, something that Derek Key doesn't always have the benefit from because these players could leave the clubs. But he was speaking, made some very interesting points, Wenger, about the necessity of bringing youth through.
Well, yeah, well, he always used to do that in the League Cup. He always played his Bugsy Malone 11 in the League Cup and everybody raved about them for, you know, a few weeks, and then they disappeared without trace, went on loan to places like Oldham and things. So, yeah, he knows what that youthful potential doesn't always translate to Premier League prowess. I've given Wenger loads of stick on this podcast many times, as you know, Dave, but I do have a bit of sympathy for him, and the point he makes is valid. You know, you put an untried youngster into a Premier League, a red-hot Premier League contest, one slip-up, that's all it takes nowadays, and it's, you know, there's a game gone, and you know, you can't afford to drop 3 points here and there because of youth. It's a difficult one. People say, well, you know, the England national side is never going to improve when you get managers like Wenger. So what? I don't give a monkey's. If I'm supporting Liverpool, I don't want Liverpool to put an untried youngster in because it might benefit England down the line. I want Liverpool to win.
Do you have some sympathy, Matt, with Arsene Wenger? Because he said it's a necessity to play those young players despite those players maybe costing him points in that season to develop them further down the line.
Well, I think any manager is going to, you know, they can talk about, you know, duty to England or, you know, whether they follow that or ignore it. But, I mean, ultimately, you know, push comes to shove, they're going to do what's right for them, their club. I think if it ends up benefiting England, then great. I mean, yeah, there is a big incentive to bring through English players because we've seen the value that they can carry. Clubs like to have them. They think they'll, you know, stay around probably for longer. And they think, you know, that there is a premium in them that we've seen. So there, you know, there is a, you know, sort of financial incentive, never mind the sort of morality of whether, you know, there is a duty to the national team or not. But, you know, we've seen in the summer with the junior England teams that there's players coming through. I mean, I think any of us who have a little bit of, well, and in my case, a lot of draw to England still, despite all the frustrations, really want to see these kids, you know, start to be given a chance. And that, I think that will be, journalistically wise, one of the, you know, quite the big stories of the next couple of months, because with the junior teams have had a bit of success, we will be very closely watching what Solanke, you know, what sort of game time does he get? You know, Chalabar, Nathan Aki, all these guys, we want to see if they're going to be given a chance. And I think that, yeah, that will be a big topic of the next couple of months.
Let's just finish this chat with talk about Philippe Coutinho and Gareth Bale. Where will they be at the end of the transfer window? I think that, Matt, Jose Mourinho highlighted after the European Super Cup, where they were soundly beaten, Manchester United, that the if there was ever a pursuit of Gareth Bale, it ended right there with him starting that match. But Philippe Coutinho could be a different case.
Yeah, well, the Bale one was funny, wasn't it? It's a sort of, you know, Tuesday's papers, I want Bale. Wednesday's papers, I can't have Bale. that was probably the sort of shortest transfer saga in history. But no, I think, I know United tried to get Bale when he went to Real Madrid. They left it too late then. He seems very happy there, and why wouldn't you be if you're winning successive Champions Leagues? I mean, it's, you know, they seem to be, you know, it's very unlikely that a team keeps winning back-to-back, but who could you bet on more than Real Madrid for the Champions League at the moment? So, you know, if I were him, I'd be staying there. He's still got a long career ahead. He's still got plenty of time to come back to England if that's where he wants to finish. So I can't see that one moving. Coutinho, the money is, you know, clearly Liverpool, no Barcelona, have got, you know, unlimited funds thanks to the Neymar transfer. So, yeah, I would love to think he stays, because, you know, he's probably my top five, one in my top five players I like to see in the Premier League. I'd be so personally gutted if he left. But I have to say, if the bidding starts to get, you know, 100 million plus, it's going to start getting very difficult for Liverpool to turn that down.
Yeah, they've reportedly, Derek, turned down £90 million for Philippe Coutinho. I know how much you love Philippe Coutinho as a Liverpool fan, Derek.
Yeah, well, you mentioned if it goes 100 million, how could Liverpool turn it down? Well, they could, because who are they going to sign to replace Coutinho for 100 million? You get a right back for 50 million now. You know, you're not going to replace Coutinho, no matter how much money you get. Barcelona, they don't need the money, Liverpool. They've got plenty. I don't see him going. He's not making any noises about wanting to go. Obviously, deep down, he'd rather be at Barcelona than Liverpool. You might get 2 days of unbroken sunshine in Barcelona, or 2 hours, in fact. And every South American we know always wants to play for one of the big Spanish clubs. So he will go there. But I'm pretty sure that he'll do with Suarez and give Liverpool one more season. And then everybody will be happy when he goes next summer.
Takes us back where we started, doesn't it? Because of the Danny Rose syndrome. I mean, as you say, Coutinho's not making noises at the moment. You know, the first we'll know whether he wants a transfer or not will probably be some... whether he gives an interview or not on the back page. So just reinforces that newspapers have our value still, even if it's dropping bombs into football clubs.
Matt, thank you for your company.
Cheers, thank you, bye.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now for the betting, we have Andy Excel, the football in-play trading manager here, and Derek McGovern, who is sunning it up in Tuscany as we speak. Derek, back on the line with us. Andy, first of all, good morning to you. Welcome.
Morning.
Let's spin through these. Let's get straight stuck in and spin through the TV games here. And we'll start with Arsenal versus Leicester. Friday night start for the Premier League, and the Gunners are 4-9 to win it. The draw 7-2, with Leicester in the betting at 11-2. Enhanced odds on the William Hill website right now. Alexandre Lacazette to score and Arsenal to win was 23-20, now 11-8. If you think Arsenal are going to win both halves, that was 11-5. That's been enhanced to 5-2. Numerous hashtag your odds offerings as well for Arsenal versus Leicester. And Arsenal come into this on the back of another success at Wembley in the Community Shield. They've got an exceptional record against Leicester in the Premier League as well. Unbeaten in 21 against the Foxes, and they've won 10 straight against them as well. This is a big but as well. They've only won one of their last seven opening day fixtures in the Premier League, and they will be without their most influential player as well, Andy. Alexis Sanchez out. How much does one man affect the betting market?
It affects it a lot. You know, he basically drives our Arsenal play because he works so hard up front as well. So without that work effort, with the less industrious Mesut Ozil, shall we say, it does have an impact. So you've got to look at that. And like you say, the opening day record is far from brilliant. I remember some terrible first days as an Arsenal fan.
Yeah. And you say it affects the market. Arsenal are 4-9 in the betting here. If Alexis Sanchez was fit and firing, and I suppose his desire to play for Arsenal has to be called into question now as well. If he was the Alexis Sanchez of the 18 months ago, what price would Arsenal be here, do you think?
I think they'd be about 3-on.
Really? That much of a difference?
Yeah, 4-11, 3-on in that area.
Okay. Derek, the Gunners taking on Leicester. I suppose with Leicester as well, just a slight caveat with them. We talked about Arsenal, but Leicester, Riyad Mahrez, his desire to leave, and Arsenal being a possible suitor could play into this as well. It further complicates things for Craig Shakespeare.
Well, it does, yeah. I was just picking up on something Andy said there, Dave, about the if Sanchez was playing. What about the fact that it's the opening day, though, Andy? Does that have an effect on the odds? For instance, I always think there's more a better likelihood of upsets on the opening day of the season than there would be, say, mid-September, because you don't know which teams are undercooked, which teams just need to blow away the cobwebs a bit more. I'm thinking, like last season, there was a couple of upsets. Hull beat the champions Leicester on the opening day last season. The season before, Arsenal lost at home to West Ham. I mean, there's always an upset. Would the odds for this game be different if it was mid-September?
Not hugely. I mean, it is a factor because of like you say, there's teams are less consistent early in the season, and as you say, they're still trying to find their feet. What I find with top level teams is the defences are ready, but the strikers, particularly when they've made signings, they're still looking to gel and find their partnerships, as it were. So I think that has a more of a random effect, if you like.
And Alexis Sanchez. But go on, Derek. Just a quick word on Alexis Sanchez here, because that abdominal injury for Sanchez, Derek, it is well timed, isn't it? Or interestingly timed,
exactly.
Anyway.
It screams a convenient injury, doesn't it? You know, all the noise. Doors to some clubs have been shut down. Apparently, PSG no longer interested in him. But he's given all the distress signals of a player who wants to be anywhere but Arsenal. I honestly can't see it being here come the end of the transfer window. And I don't, you know, I've got a sneaking feeling that he won't play for them again. So I think without him, he is one of those players that does have an influence on the odds when he's not playing. I just don't fancy Arsenal here. Their opening day record as well, that screams to me that something Wenger does in pre-season is not right. A club of Arsenal's status should not be having such terrible opening day results. Last season they skipped four against Liverpool, remember? I'm giving Leicester more than a half a chance here. And I'm also looking down the squads in the first goal scoring markets and so on. And I don't think there's a hill of beans between Arsenal's squad and Leicester's squad, you know, in terms of talent. I think these odds are skewed. I'm going to give Leicester a real go here.
Okay, Leicester 11-2 for Derek. Andy, what's your prediction?
2-1 Arsenal.
You think Arsenal will get the job done?
I think they'll scrape home. I don't think it'll be particularly pretty. I think they've had a decent pre-season, though, which is slightly different to previous years. There's a little bit of unrest around. But I think within the squad that's been playing, there does look like there's a desire to show the world, as it were.
Arsenal 2-1 is in the betting at 7-1. Let's move on to Watford versus Liverpool. 12:30 kick-off on Saturday, this one. Watford are 9-2 to win the match. The draw 16-5 with Liverpool in the betting at 11-20. Liverpool to win both halves was 5-1, enhanced to 3-1. And if you think Roberto Firmino is going to score first or to score any time in the match and Liverpool are going to win the game, that was 13-8. That's been enhanced to an attractive 2-1. Again, hashtag your odds available for this match. And Derek, Liverpool have looked spectacular in pre-season. The fluidity in that front line has been superb. And they've won their last three Premier League meetings with Watford as well by an aggregate scoreline of 9-1. And this fixture last season will be remembered for Emre Can's spectacular overhead kick in that 1-0 win. But Watford with Marco Silva now, boss, much expected despite that squad not looking particularly strong. But given he almost saved Hull from relegation, I think that's why people aren't backing Watford to be relegated this season.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said on a podcast last week. I think he's been made. Never forget any of the players they've signed. Well, they're instantly forgettable anyway. It's the manager who they've signed. That gives them the best chance of staying up. But Watford, Jesus. I mean, three of the worst five performances I saw in the Premier League last season came from Watford. And so did the other two. I mean, absolutely awful. But I remember what our council punters, Liverpool looked certainties. But our council punters to remember that game in May that Liverpool won thanks to that worldie from Emre Can. Because I think Liverpool were roughly around the same, 8-15, I think they were that day. And I said, I remember writing somewhere that it was time to bet like men, but don't let your missus find out. Because I thought Liverpool were absolute certainties. And they were awful that night, Liverpool. And Watford showed a bit of fight. So it worries me a little bit. Especially as it's the opening day as well. But as you say, Liverpool have been irresistible in pre-season. Watford lost their last six games last season, and I can't see the signings they've made arresting that slide. I can see the signings they've made getting the transfer committee arrested, because there's nothing there that would, you know, that makes you think they're going to have a good season. They've jacked it in them two seasons running once they've reached 40 points. The club crest is a towel, I'm led to believe. they're relying on goals for Troy Deeney, who spent his career in matches largely anonymous until popping up with a deflected goal. And it's still at age of 29, his MO is still the same, minus the goals. I just can't believe that he's an established Premier League striker. I think they're a side bereft of quality. And if Liverpool show half the hunger they've shown in pre-season, they'll walk this. Liverpool don't often win 2-0, but they did at Vicarage Road in May, and they will do again this weekend.
Troy Deeney can't be only 29 years old, by the way.
He's had the best 10 years of his career between the ages of 28 and 29.
He's appeared in 75 of Watford's last 76 Premier League games since the start of the 2015-2016 season. But he won't appear this week. He's got a thigh problem, I believe, so I don't think he'll be in the starting lineup. They've made a big move for Andre Gray. He's signed for, I think, just under £20 million from Burnley. By the way, Liverpool to win 2-0, 8-5 in the betting market here. Andy, I suppose that move for Andre Gray is well-timed because they need a new striker.
They need something. I don't know about Troy Deeney's thigh. I think he's got a problem with his left, right foot, his head, the rest of him. I'd love to put him up for first goal scorer just for Derek, but I can't. As it comes to Liverpool, I mean, Derek's in Italy at the moment, we know that, but Philippe Coutinho will be off to Spain soon, so you've got to factor that in.
Well, we talked earlier on the FWA podcast, and I don't think he will. I think he'll stick around for another season.
Derek says he's got one more season left in him, so we'll see.
Another 10 or 20 million, he'll be packing his bags and on his way, I think.
Well, it shows you how quickly the transfer window's changed again, hasn't it, Andy? Because people this time last year were saying Paul Pogba, 80-odd million pounds. That's incredible. And now it doesn't look like a drop in the ocean by any means, but it looks pretty much standard value, doesn't it, now?
It's just gone mad. I don't know. You almost wonder where is it going to stop? I just don't know where it's going to stop.
As far as these prices are concerned, Watford 9-2 in the betting. Because Marco Silva's there, does that affect the... Up there in the trading room, you all sit down, you all try and come up with your own tissue prices for a game like this.
Yeah.
Is Marco Silva's name bandied about, and that's the reason you've got 9-2 Watford instead of maybe they could be 6-7, 8-1?
Probably. I mean, like Derek said, he's as big a signer as they can make. They couldn't sign a player anywhere in the same quality as he is, so he can make more difference than any player they can sign, even Andre Gray, who is an unproven, really, at Premier League level to an extent. I mean, I just can't see Liverpool not winning this, I'm afraid. It's afraid to say. 3-0 I've got it down for, and the enhancement to win both halves is one that I think is a good one, from 5-2 to 3-1. I'd quite like that.
Liverpool to win 3-0 is in the betting at 10-1. You say you're afraid to say, is this one of the results that will affect your week?
Yeah. You know, the big five, if they all win this week, we're going to be not smoking cigars, let's put it that way. It'll be Ribena rather than brandy.
You say if the big five all win, if one of them gets beaten, would that still be a good week, or would you need two or three?
One would be all right for us.
Right, okay.
Yeah, anyone, coupon killer, as they call it, we'll be looking for the coupon killer.
Okay. Let's move on to Brighton versus Manchester City. 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. Brighton 8-1 to win this. Again, another one of the big five, big six at a short price here. And Manchester City 100-30 on to win the game. The draw 9-2. Both teams to score in the first half was 9-2. That's been enhanced to 11-2. If you think Sergio Aguero and Raheem Sterling are both going to score, that was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 11-2. And Sergio Aguero is a man to watch, Andy, in the early part of the campaign. He's got 5 goals in his last 6 previous opening day fixtures. And there's a feeling, I think, that City are going to come out of the traps quickly here, Andy. They did last season. We saw that. I think they traded odds on, didn't they, early on in the campaign, City, for the title?
Yeah, last season they did get off to a flyer. And I think his message is that Pep's messages are getting home now. And I think he's certainly woken Sergio up with the arrival of Gabriel Jesus. So, you know, that's given him his wake-up call. He was getting in a bit of a comfort zone there, I think. And now he realises he's got to start working again. So, yeah. I can't see anything but a City win, and quite comfortably.
Do you think Aguero will be the man this weekend?
He should be. I don't think Brighton are granny great shakes at the back. I don't see much between them and Huddersfield in terms of overall quality.
Yeah. Sergio Aguero, by the way, 4-5 to score any time. He's 3-1 to score first and 3-1 to score last. Interesting what Andy David was saying there about Sergio Aguero maybe just getting a bit complacent, but when he's on it, we've talked about this on the podcast numerous times, he is still the best Premier League striker.
Well, the best finish, without a doubt. So Sergio Aguero is one of those players that, if you know the ball's come to him and he's got a chance of swivelling and having a shot, it'll go in, or one-on-one with a keeper, it'll go in. He never seems to miss. I'd stake my mortgage on Sergio Aguero finishing a chance off, more so than any striker. City are going to walk this. I mean, 100-30 away from home, they're not the kind of places you used to touch a few years ago. But there's such a gulf in class between City and Brighton. I'm looking down the Brighton list of players just to see if you signed someone, you know, I haven't been noticing. No, they haven't. I mean, you're going to play Lewis Dunk, Shane Duffy, Izzy Brown. They sound more like members of a Louis Walsh boy band than Premier League players. It's just, I just can't see how they're going to, you know, they're going to hold their own at all in the Premier League. And this is, they don't get much tougher than this, do City, on the opening day of the season. I'm going to go for City to win by more than 2 goals. I think it's got a cakewalk in the offing.
City -2, 11-5. Do you echo those thoughts, Andy? Do you think City romp this?
I've got it down here as a 4-1. So.
Right. That would play into that handicap market then. City to win the game by 4-1, by the way. 16-1 here with William Hill. From New Boys Brighton, we head to New Boys Newcastle, who host Spurs on Sunday. 1:30 kickoff, live and televised. And the two, Newcastle, are 18-5 to win this game. The draw 14-5. With Spurs in the betting at 8-11. The enhanced odds, Dwight Gayle to score and Newcastle to win, was 13-2. That's been enhanced to 8-1. Harry Kane to score and Spurs to win was 7-5. That's been enhanced to 7-4. We spoke on the FWA section of the podcast, Andy, with Matt Dickinson from The Times, about Danny Rose and his interview that's gone out in The Sun this morning, and him being unhappy and frustrated with the lack of activity in the transfer window so far, and some of these Spurs players maybe not getting paid their market value, given they are a top six side but they're not on top six wages. From a betting perspective, does that affect the prices at all?
Not really, but what I would say is all the vibes coming out of Tottenham, it is like Back to the Future, but substitute Tottenham for Arsenal when Arsenal were moving to the Emirates.
Mm-hmm.
All the messages sound the same from the players. It's not a good portent for me. I just don't see them having a really good season.
They're 8-11 to win this game, which, when you consider Manchester City travelling to the Amex to take on Brighton, they are 100-30 on. Spurs, who finished above Manchester City last season, are going to Newcastle, who are a newly promoted side as well, but they're as big as 8-11. What's the difference?
One of the differences is it's Newcastle, not Brighton. That place is going to be rocking. They're going to have been churning for this for months. The last six games, there's been three wins apiece. 24 goals in those six games. So that tells you pretty much where you are. It's, you know, I don't see a strong favourite in the game. I've actually got it in for a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, you think that Spurs might go there and not pick up three? This could be your coupon buster this week.
Oh, this would make me doubly happy.
Of course, as an Arsenal fan. 2-2 draw is in the betting at 16-1. It's not just Danny Rose that's unhappy, though. Rafael Benitez, Derek, is not content at Newcastle. There was a really interesting interview with him the other day. I think it was on Sky Sports. He was non-committal about his future. There's zero optimism, I think, from the fans there as well. And Mike Ashley is already... The season's not even begun. You get the feeling he's pushing Benitez to his absolute limit. They've barely made a signing. And it's generally tough for championship champions that have been newly promoted to win on the opening day of the season. None of the last nine have got 3 points. I think there's going to be turmoil up north this season, Derek.
Well, the one thing they've got in their favour is Rafa Benitez, and if he stays, he's going to be worth 12 points more, even probably more to them. You know, that's how highly I rate him. I mean, there's been a lot of money for him in the sack race for Benitez, and he should make the most of that, because he ain't going to get any off Mike Ashley. He's tighter than the triple head. He's that man. They're one of the richest men in Europe, and he only spends his money on Guinness, it seems. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And like, you know me, Dave. I'm the kind of person who goes through life demanding to see the manager. But when you're already the manager, who do you complain to? In Rafa's case, it's everyone. He just complains about everything. You never see him happy, does he? There's going to be a lot of to and fro between him and Ashley. I mean, Ashley couldn't be more despised on Tyneside. Everybody hates him there. And the fact that he's not helped Rafa spend a penny in this summer, that's not going to gain popularity for him. But it's Newcastle. And once the match kicks off, the fans forget all that. They forget that for 90 minutes. They just get behind their players. And the St. James Park effect, I have always thought, is underestimated. I think that a big price here to beat Tottenham side might just be wobbling after the Danny Rose outburst this week. A Tottenham side that probably will be looking at this season with trepidation, given that they don't have a home game all season. I'm a bit with Andy's view of Tottenham here. Worrying signs for them. I'm going to give Newcastle the edge here at a decent price, I hope.
Newcastle 18-5 to win the game for Derek at home. And we finish the weekend with Manchester United versus West Ham at Old Trafford. United 2-7 to win the game. The draw 9-2 with the Hammers in the betting at 10-1. Paul Pogba to score and Manchester United to win was 9-4, enhanced to 11-4. Javier Hernandez, the old boy, to score against his former club, and West Ham to win was 12-1. That's been enhanced to 16-1. Derek, I know you can't read too much into the European Super Cup, but we saw that gulf in class, didn't we, with Real Madrid? They absolutely dominated Manchester United, particularly in the first half, and were value for more than that 2-1 winning margin.
Yeah. I mean, I said last week, I can't believe where the money's coming from for United to win the league and why they're so short in the betting, because the signs they've made this season don't interest me in the slightest. I don't think they're a stronger team at all. They've got a hell of a lot of work to do. I remember years ago, you might remember this, Andy, an FA Cup match, West Ham went to Old Trafford and won 1-0. They were 10-1 that day. They were useless in those days, West Ham, which explained the 10-1 quote. And Man United were in their pomp under Fergie, were in all sorts. And everyone was saying, why have you back West Ham? Why? I just got a feeling. Anyway, it was that game where Di Canio scored that goal and Fabio Barthez put his hand up claiming for an offside that never was. Well, the 10-1 today, or this weekend, West Ham, they're a better side than they were then.
United are a substantially inferior side. They've made some interesting signings in the close season, West Ham, that could really inspire them. That could go pear-shaped as well. It's one to watch. But I think at 10-1, on the opening day of the season, when there's always a shock, I think that's a big bet. I think West Ham are massively overpriced. Let's not forget they went to Arsenal on the opening day a couple of seasons ago and won 2-0.
Okay, 10-1 for West Ham is Derek's bet in the game at Old Trafford on Sunday. It will be intriguing to see how Slaven Bilic's new signings work out, because he's brought Javier Hernandez, Marko Arnautovic, Pablo Zabaleta. It's a complete contrast to what he did the previous season, where he bought unknown players that had no Premier League experience. He's gone this time, Andy, and bought players that have genuine Premier League form.
I love the Arnautovic signing. I think he's a great player.
Yeah,
as Mourinho said himself in the past, he's been a bit of a head case in the past, but haven't we all? but yeah, I love that signing. I'm with Derek a bit on this one. Jose Mourinho's boring army send us to sleep on a Sunday afternoon for a nice nap. There ain't going to be many goals in this, so it could go either way for me.
You say boring army. He's bought Victor Lindelof to play alongside Ander Herrera and Nemanja Matic. I mean, whichever way they're set up now, they're going to play with two defensive midfielders, aren't they? They're going
Can't
to try
get
and
enough
win
of them.
They're precisely. They're going to try and win every game 1-0 or 2-0, aren't they?
Yeah, and if he gets 1-0 up, we bring another two on. So you know that's his modus operandi. They're going to end up with no strikers. I wouldn't be too happy if I was a striker. You know, you can buy and sell their playing minutes.
You've said all this, Andy, but looking at the betting markets here, under 2.5 goals in the match is 23-20. Over 2.5 goals is 13-20. It's an interesting pricing structure. Are we expecting dull and dour Manchester United at Old Trafford again?
Well, I do, but that's a personal opinion. No, you know, historically, United score goals at home, and I think people are still thinking in that way. It's, you know, you've seen this across the times with various sports. The market takes a while to catch up with actuality sometimes. I remember Tiger Woods when he got to his pomp in golf. It took the market ages to catch up with actually how good he was. And this might be the same, I think.
It's going to take a while for the market to catch up with how dire Manchester United are. Is that what you're saying, Andy?
How tactically astute Jose Mourinho is, you might put it.
Do you think that's a way in for the punters then, at the moment?
Yeah.
Because
just back under goals in every one of their games.
Yeah, and you think you'll make profit. Go on, Derek.
Well, Andy, you must have a hell of a lot of influence on odds at William Hill. So why is your personal viewpoint have odds with what your company is offering in this game?
I'm the in-play bit. I might disagree with my pre-match colleagues.
Up there, for people that don't know, basically we are in a studio in Leeds, and the trading floor is a couple of floors above us, because they're superior to us down here, Derek. They're a couple of floors above. And there's a complete split, isn't there? So one team does pre-match and one team does in-play, Andy.
Yep. There is some conversation goes on between the two, but we trade pretty much independently.
Okay, the draw in that match is 9-2. West Ham for Derek at 10-1. And what's your prediction, Andy? Would you look at that under 2.5?
Yes, I would look at under 2.5. I've got a horrible feeling it'll be 1-0 United, and we'll all be reaching for the Oval team by the time that's finished. But
6-1, by the way, for Manchester United to win the game by a goal to nil. Just before we move on to the best of the rest and get your best bet for the week as well, we're going to take a few moments out and hear from Sam Norris, who is our European football expert, giving his best bets for the European football this weekend.
More action in Ligue 1 coming up on Saturday, and I make Marseille my nap selection this week. They are away to Nantes in the 4 p.m. game on Saturday, and I think they're generously priced up here. Nantes are in the betting at 13-5. The draw is 12-5, and Marseille are in the betting at 21-20. A shade of odds against for Marseille. They're definitely the bet for me this week. They're unbeaten domestically since March, had a really good end to last season to finish fifth in the table. Nantes probably did overachieve last term in finishing seventh, but they didn't end the season well, and I think that poor momentum has going to carry through to this campaign a little bit. It certainly did for their first game of the season, where they were thumped 3-0 away from home to Lille last week. Marseille, on the other hand, they got the season off to a flyer, beating Dijon by that same scoreline of 3-0. So I think Marseille will probably get the job done here at 21-20. It's a Marseille side that are without Bafétimbi Gomis this season. They have made Florent Thauvin a permanent signing, and Luis Gustavo comes in as well from Wolfsburg. So whilst the Marseille squad is probably a little bit thinner than it was 12 months ago, with a few more additions, I can see them going well this season. And even if they don't, I think they've got plenty in the locker to get the better of Nantes on the second week of fixtures in Ligue 1.
Now, we've been to all the televised matches, chaps. Derek, what's your best of the rest? Where are we going for the other bets? Anything catching your eye?
Well, I think Palace are overpriced at home, just under the even money mark. I think they're overpriced. But I do think in the games we've covered, I think there's going to be an upset. I've got a strong fancy for West Ham, but I think Newcastle are 7-2, 18-5. I'm not going to go any elsewhere on the coupon because there's some trappy fixtures there, the kind of fixtures you don't want to see on the opening day. But the Newcastle game is a match I want to watch, and I'll be having a few bob to add the interest. I think they're a big price, Newcastle.
Newcastle in the market at 18-5. I do agree with Derek as well. I think that the one bet that stood out to me for them, those teams that are odds on this weekend, are Crystal Palace at home to Huddersfield. I think they're going to have a pretty accomplished season, Andy. And Huddersfield, as you made mention of, there's not much between them and Brighton in the market, but I fancy Huddersfield are going to struggle with the squad they've got.
I like Palace this year, and I think that's right. I think 4-5 is my one I'm putting up this week, Palace at home to Huddersfield. The Huddersfield fan upstairs desperately tried to talk me out of it, but he's not getting his way. I'm sticking with Palace. I'll take the stick if it doesn't come in.
They're the nap this week.
Yep.
Palace the nap for Andy at 4-5. I was going to nap them. You've stolen them. Newcastle at 4-1, Derek. Your nap?
18-5 is. Have you gone out to 4-1?
Yeah, just gone out to 4-1, Derek, as we speak.
The American pilots are listening to me.
Yeah, they've got the
words
the inside track here. The words out that you fancy them, Derek.
Drifting like a barge.
If you two are going for those two, I did fancy Palace as maybe my best bet, just to complete the treble here for the punt podcast nap treble in the Premier League. I'm going for Sergio Aguero to continue his fine goal-scoring form in the early part of the season, and I think Aguero to score any time, which is now 5-6, is my best bet this weekend. So that treble, Palace 4-5, Newcastle at 4-1, and Aguero to score any time against Brighton at 5-6, 15.5-1, that treble. Derek, are you going to perform better this season?
It would be hard not to, wouldn't it, really? I've had the worst season in memory apart from this summer.
And Derek, I was at the FWA Live with Arsene Wenger last night.
Did he mention me?
Well, he said all the stick that you've given him over the years and that what have you done lately for me spiel that you've come out with. He said, how could you possibly be invited back onto the podcast for another season, Derek?
I probably won't be after this weekend's results.
two trophies in the bag already for Arsenal.
Yeah, he's done well so far, hasn't he? Thank you, Derek, for your company.
Pleasure. Speak to you soon.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
Up next, we're going to hear from Pete Farries, who's going to give us his best bets on the Championship.
ACCA 5 is William Hill's new ACCA insurance. It means if you have a 5 selection accumulator and one lets you down, you'll get your money back as a free bet. And it's available across all sports. ACCA 5, exclusive to William Hill. T's and C's apply.
The Championship.
Having conceded 6 goals in 2 games, I'm going to oppose Barnsley here. Yes, they came from behind to beat Morecambe midweek, but defensively, Paul Heckingbottom's men have looked very, very frail. Indeed, their opponents Ipswich at 17-10 are my nap of the week. They started their league season with a victory, have strengthened superbly in the transfer window, including most recently Martin Waghorn. And for me, yes, away from home they can sometimes not be trusted, but certainly I would be happy to back them in this game. On top of that, maybe not all is well at Barnsley. Plenty of their good players, including of course Andre Iedom, looking to leave the club. So it's no question for me that actually, despite Ipswich's away form over the last couple of years, not exactly setting the world alight, They've invested in a very good squad, and they're kicking on very well indeed. So my nap of the week will be Ipswich at 17-10.
Now, just before we hear from Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross with their best bets in Leagues 1 and 2 respectively, each and every week I will give you a NAPS table update so you'll be able to track how our pundits are doing. Obviously, you've heard the NAPS from myself, from Andy Excel, and from Derek McGovern this week, and indeed from Pete Farries. But with Al Ross and Gav Pushlowski's NAPS to come, here's a NAPS table update. Week 1. Al Ross sits on top of the leaderboard currently. He put up Luton to score in both halves at 13-8, and that gives him a rolling total of plus 16.25 to a £10 stake each and every week. I will keep on top of the NAPS table throughout the course of the season. I promise you, listeners, you will have your weekly NAPS update. But now we'll finish the podcast by hearing from Al Ross, but first of all, Gav Pushlowski on League One.
League One.
Second weekend of action in League One, and here is my NAP selection. It is Bristol Rovers at home to Peterborough United at 23-20. I'm backing the home side, who score plenty, hardly lose, two defeats in the last 15 at home towards the end of last season, and won four of their last five towards the end of last season, Bristol Rovers. Their home form is absolutely solid. Bowden, Gaffney and Harrison all scoring goals. Bristol Rovers lost 1-0 opening day of the season away at Charlton, but at home in the Carabao Cup, they won 4-1 against Cambridge. They do score plenty of goals. Peterborough, on the other hand, away from home, don't score plenty of goals. One goal in the last four away games towards the end of last season. Peterborough don't travel that well, and they only won 3 of 13 away from home towards the end of last season in League One. Last time they played here, Peterborough, it was a 2-2 draw, so over 2.5 goals, a definite play. But my NAP selection is Bristol Rovers at 23-20.
League Two.
Early in the season, your squad may be 85% fit. What do the EFL do? They schedule a League Cup game, in which Carlisle make the mistake of playing 8 of the side that started last week in the league, the other 3 all coming off the bench, and they were made to play extra time. This early in the season, when recovery times can be long, that is going to be tough, and it makes Cambridge at home at 23-20 this week the nap. Now don't get me wrong, I like Carlisle. With a fit Jabo Abire, they may well have beaten Exeter in the playoffs last season, but they didn't have a fit Abire then, and they don't now because Cambridge do. Cambridge got him on a free transfer from Carlisle over the summer. One of many reasons why Carlisle look weaker to me this season than last, and they go to Cambridge, who have the likes of Abire and the Ireland goalkeeper David Ford now, and look much stronger. So it's a less strong and knackered Carlisle going to Cambridge. Cambridge did lose 1-0 at Exeter last week. I think they go up automatically, so no disgrace there. They also got spanked in the cup in midweek, but it wasn't them. It was their reserves, really. Sean Derry made 9 changes. So 2 of last week's starting 11 for Cambridge played 90 minutes in midweek. Most of Carlisle's played 120. And Carlisle's away form doesn't make for good reading in 2017. I'm not expecting it to improve. I'm a believer in outrights being naps, so 23-20 on Cambridge it is. But Jabo Abire, 8-5 to score against his old club in the first home game of the season. And Abire in a Cambridge win at 13-5 looked too tasty to ignore as well.
Thank you everyone for tuning into the Punt Podcast this week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at William Hill. Thank you to Matt Dickinson, Derek McGovern, Gav Pushlowski, Al Ross, Pete Farries, Sam Norris for their contributions to the podcast, and of course our football in-player trading manager Andy Excel. Check out all the betting ahead of the Premier League this weekend on the William Hill website by going to williamhill.com, and don't forget you can download this podcast via iTunes or audioboom.com each and every week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you for listening to the Punt Podcast, and we'll be back next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.